should be getting around a table having that conversation about money as right. as a church family. And when things are tougher and finances are more constrained, as they are in current times, as we're recording this, we should be exploring that together and thinking, well, what does that mean? What are the implications? And who within the family is going to be able to help meet those needs? And so, who within the family is going to need more support? And
hello and welcome to Independence, the FIEC podcast. My name is Adrian Reynolds. I'm the head of national ministries for the FIEC, and I'm here today with Paul Horton. Hello, Paul.
Hello, Adrian.
From Kingdom Bank. You're the chief executive of Kingdom Bank. We're not here to talk about banking, though. We have done a podcast on that, but we're here to talk about money more generally. And we're really trying to address church leaders and just help them think about money, which is it's a difficult subject to talk about. You've been a church treasurer. You just stepped down as a church treasurer after 70 years or something. Yes, 15 years. So you've been a treasurer for a long time. It's not an easy subject to talk about money, is it, in church?
It's funny, we're very British, aren't we?
Yeah.
I think other countries probably find it easier than we do. But we tend to avoid talking about money. But we should talk about money, I think.
Yeah, and it seems to me I'm preaching on Ezra at the weekend, and very struck in Ezra chapter 2. There's this long list of names in Ezra chapter 2, which doesn't look very promising. But actually, I think it's full of promise. It's full of explaining what it means to be a true worshipper of the living God. And there's this wonderful little section at the end where the people come into Jerusalem. They see the temple, which has been broken down, and they give free will offerings. It's sort of a wonderful, spontaneous moment of generosity. This is end of chapter 2. When they arrived at the house of the Lord in Jerusalem, some of the heads of the families gave free will offerings towards the rebuilding of the house of God on its site. According to their ability, they gave to the treasury for this work 61,000 darics of gold, 5,000 miners of silver, and, don't forget, 100 priestly garments. Mm-hmm. Now, a darric of gold, I don't know if that's a kind of a quantity that Kingdom Bank work in, miners of silver. It's basically several tons of gold and silver. And it's just a wonderful picture of generosity, which I think is kind of foreshadowing the New Testament principle. So people often think about tithing as a measure of giving that's wrapped up in the Mosaic law. But I think as you move towards the New Testament, the measure is not a tithe. That doesn't appear so much in the New Testament, it seems to me. It's generosity. That's a 2 Corinthians 8:9. Mm. And that's what God has been towards us. So here's a wonderful picture of generosity. And we know that's the principle in church life. But actually, for me as a church leader, that is quite an awkward thing to talk about. And is it just being British, or is there more to it than that that makes it such an awkward subject, do you think?
Yeah, I kind of joking, I suppose culturally, I think there is a British aspect.
Yeah, I think there is.
We find it difficult talking about those kind of things. But I think if there's something, you know, if there's something I've learned as treasurer, I think it's about being family, isn't it? So it's as a family of, you know, mum and dad and kids, particularly perhaps older kids, if you are going through financially challenging times, you want to sit around the table and have that conversation. You want to think about money because that's how you help your children learn about money and grow up.
Yeah.
And
think, so you give, maybe you might give them a little bit of pocket money or whatever it is to help them learn how to spend and how to save.
Exactly. And then maybe an allowance or whatever it happens to be. And then they might go off to university and you talk about how money's going to work. But as a church family, we should be thinking, actually, what can we, how can we have that conversation? And we should be getting around a table having that conversation about money as a church family. And when things are tougher and finances are more constrained, as they are in current times, as we're recording this, we should be exploring that together and thinking, well, what does that mean? What are the implications? And who within the family is going to be able to help meet those needs? And so, who within the family is going to need more support? And
that's really helpful because I think we think about church as a family in some areas of church life, especially in caring and pastoring one another. But actually, when it comes to some of the kind of more sort of black and white things, the money, the charity regulations, we tend to think of church as an organization, I think, and because we have to do organizational things.
Yep.
You know, we have to have corporate bank accounts and we have to fulfill charity regulations and all those sorts of things. So I think there's this mismatch, which you've just put your finger on really clearly for us, that actually we put the money side of church into organization, structure, governance. Whereas in fact it should be, I mean, it needs to be there as well, but it needs to be family side of church life. And that's really helpful. So as a church leader, I'm not presenting this as a trustee. I'm technically I am, I know, but actually as part of the family.
And it also, it demonstrates where our hearts are, doesn't it, as well?
Treasure
is, there is our heart. So yeah, there are hearts,
yes,
also.
Okay.
Where is the money in the church family, or where are we keeping our reserves? How are we thinking about money? And the way that we think about money does reveal a lot about the way that our hearts are inclined.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that's a particularly big point, but I think it's...
Let me just push on that a little bit, because actually one of the things that's slightly difficult about this, I think, is, and then this is different from a family, is that if I'm the, let's say I'm the senior pastor in church, I'm paid by the church. And very often my salary and maybe the salary together of other team members will form a very large chunk of what the church income is used for. Mm. You know, possibly 60, 70% more than that if you're not renting a building, you've got your own building. So actually that does make it a little bit awkward for me to stand up and talk about money.
And therefore,
it sounds like, you know, I'm saying, you know, come on, I want a bit more money myself.
Yeah. And therefore I think it is incumbent on the leadership, excluding those who are paid, to step up and take responsibility for talking
right,
about this.
Okay.
Because to an extent there's a governance issue that you shouldn't be having it shouldn't be the person who is paid having the conversation about how much they're paid. Yeah. You want other people to do that. So let's take a situation, you know, I realize there are different governance structures in different churches, but if you've got a situation where you've got five trustees, two of whom are on the payroll in some ways, the other three have got a responsibility to take the money aspects of things seriously and to work out how much that person's going to be paid, and think through, you know, where that money's going to come from and ensure that family is having the conversation.
Yeah.
I think that would be probably my
advice. And just, this is an interesting aside, the question we get asked more than any other question in the FIC office is what's the FIC pay scale? In other words, how much do we pay our pastor? And in case you're listening to this and wondering what the answer to that question is, we don't have a sheet that says it should be this much. We say to people, you need to pay them. The worker deserves his wages. You need to pay them well enough that they can live where your church is, in the area that your church is, with their housing costs such as they are, and that they need to not be, you know, scraping around. And that seems to me to be the biblical principle, the worker deserves his wages. So we don't say it's this much money, it's that much money. And we tend not to even say it's this point on the teacher's pay scale, which I think has been done in churches in the past, because actually teacher salaries outside of London are pretty much the same everywhere. But the cost of living in one place compared to another can be very, very different, driven by housing. So just if you're listening and wondering, you know, what's the FIC advice on paying staff? We say you're an independent church, you've got to work it out for yourself, but it needs to be enough to allow them to live and serve where you are. Anyway, that's by the by. Let's just talk about money a little bit more generally. Should preachers be preaching about money?
The Bible talks a lot about money, so unless you're going to leave a lot of the Bible out, then yes, absolutely.
And what should we be preaching?
Well, shouldn't we be teaching the Bible faithfully?
Oh, okay, yes, right. Let's move on. Okay, you've got me. Yes, we should be. I think I guess what I was trying to get at is we've got to get to the principles, and it does seem to me that especially in the New Testament, it does shift to principles, doesn't it, rather than percentages.
Yes, absolutely, it does. And I mean, you mentioned before about, you know, we want to talk about generosity. And sacrificial giving, giving which has no effect on my life doesn't feel very sacrificial. Giving which is I've not really thought about and just happens by standing order and I don't think about for 2 years at a time doesn't feel very generous.
And that's one of the problems with standing orders, isn't it? That it's easily forgotten. Yes.
Now I think standing orders are really helpful, but having a
as a church treasure, you love them.
We love them, and I was, you know, privileged to be in a church where 95% of our income, gift income, was by standing order, which makes it much easier to budget. And if you're thinking, well, I don't really want to do a standing order because, you know, for the reason maybe we just talked about, actually it is really helpful for your church treasurer and church leadership to be thinking, to have standing orders, to have a regular level of income, even though that could change next month. You can change your standing order, but generally speaking, people know how much that means is going to come in. So it is really helpful for church planning. But having a point in the, at least one point in the year or every 6 months or whatever it is, where you sit down as a family or sit down as, you know, as a unitary family, and think how much are we giving to our church and, to the, into the church family. Actually, that's a really good thing to do. It's made me think we should do that as a family.
Yeah. And actually we need to be able to say as part of a family, some people will have to give less. And so we're recording this at a moment when, you know, we're in the middle of it's been called a cost of living crisis. It's pretty clear that the times are economically tough, I think, at the moment. And I think we need to have to say to people in church, some people will have to give less, and that's fine. Mm. But some people can give more and ought to be thinking about that as well.
Yes. In most of the situations that we find ourselves in terms of economic change, it is not, unless all your church family are of a very similar demographic, you will find that different members of the church family have got different financial situations. So some will be retired, some will be have new families and just taken on a mortgage, and that if that's the situation, if those retired people have paid off their mortgage, those two are very different extremes. Yes. Yeah. in a kind of financial situation. Yeah. Their personal financial situation will be very different, and therefore the way they need to respond to the opportunity, the need and the opportunity that the church is presenting will be very different. And it may be it will be that actually members of the family, the church family, need to step up to meet the need where others need to reduce their giving. In particular, in the current climate where people have, you know, where rent's going up, mortgages are going up, food is going up. I know we're recording this in a point in time, but that is generally the case over a period of time at the moment, sure, and likely to continue.
I guess some people might think, well, actually, it's all going to be a bit of a damp squib, cost of living stuff. Because I think at the beginning of COVID, if you can remember back that far, I've kind of tried to blank those years out of my mind, because they weren't particularly enjoyable in some ways. But I think at the beginning of COVID, we suddenly thought there's going to be giving disaster.
Yeah.
It's going to be the ship's going to go down because it's going to be no money. But actually, I think most churches have discovered that actually, in terms of finances, they're at least as well off, sometimes better off. Is that your experience?
Our experience, we at Kingdom Bank, we obviously serve churches, so we get quite a lot of experience of dealing with churches and church finances, as I'm sure you do as well. But our experience was that the two groups of churches which were most affected by COVID were those which were dependent on rental income, maybe from the guides,
right,
brownies, or scouts, or from a local cafe, running their coffee shop or something. Rental income that dried up, and also those which were dependent on cash in the plate on a Sunday, and those really struggled, and so that was hard for them, and we were able to, in terms of our mortgage work that we do with customers, we were able to work with them through that period of time. I think what we're seeing in the current environment is very different. That actually. Although one of the big things we've seen are utility prices increasing and generally inflationary increases, a church which might be spending £2,000 or might have been spending £2,000 on its electricity and gas, maybe doubling that to £4,000, that's a big increase. But if they've got £100,000 total expenditure, it's not that big an increase. No. They can probably cope. Whereas if suddenly what they're finding is that 80% of their church family who are really struggling because their mortgage has just shot through the roof, their rent's going up, the food costs are going up, their utility bills are going up, all of those challenges affecting people's disposable income, even people who thought carefully about their giving at the right kind of in the right order of things, are particularly struggling at the moment. I think it's the level of gift income to churches falling. That's the big impact here, much more than the utility price going up for churches. That's what we're seeing from churches at the moment.
How do leaders anticipate some of those things? So I think one of the things we do in our church is we're very careful that our treasurer is a deacon. Mm. We don't have any visibility of what people give except in total. So we know the total number, but we don't know whether individuals even give or not. We think that's good for us as leaders to be protected from that. We don't want that information. And we think it's actually could easily be abused. So we have that protection. But on the other hand, we don't actually know when people are reducing standing orders, when people are finding it hard. So how would you as a treasurer advise me as a leader to be able to lead a church through that kind of that situation without having all the facts and figures at my fingertips, I guess?
Well, you can have facts and figures in overview and in to which give an indication of what's going on so that you really understand what's going on, even though you don't know the people behind.
Okay.
So we worked quite hard a number of years ago to produce some regular quarterly data which showed average size of gift and whether things were trending up or down. We show some nice charts that you can do in Excel, which treasurers love typically.
Yes. I've discovered that treasurers love very long reports.
I would, if you're a treasurer, I would discourage long reports.
Yeah. I'll walk up. Let's come back to that because that's an important point.
Because people don't understand them. You've got to, if you're a treasurer doing your job well, you need to produce stuff which other people understand. It's not just about looking after the money. Yeah. But understanding how things are trending up or down in terms of numbers of givers as a percentage of your church family, average size of gift, particularly standing orders, you can see that coming through. It's quite easy to produce something which is...
And you're not revealing any confidences.
And there's no confidence revealed. But then you can spot trends. You can see actually people are struggling. People, 30 people in the past 6 months have reduced their standing order. We're going to need to do something about that because presumably our expenditure is the same or even going up.
Yes.
So therefore, the 20% of the church family who probably are not so affected by the current financial situation, maybe we need to be talking particularly to them to say, actually, would you be able to help? Would you be able to increase your standing order to compensate for these other members of the church family who are struggling? Again, it comes back to that family conversation, doesn't it?
Yeah. Now, in families, very often someone has a lot more say than someone else. I've seen situations, sadly, where money is power, and you have too, I know, where someone who is especially a large giver or gives a particular kind of gift can exercise a certain amount of power, not always to the glory of God, it seems to me. What sorts of things do we need to be on the lookout in terms of just the power that can be associated with money? Power has become a very hot topic, hasn't it, in church life and how people exercise power. And I think, and rightly so, we're beginning to understand more that your position in church conveys has a certain power that goes with it, needs to be used wisely. But it's also true, isn't it, that the giving and money and power go together.
Yes. I think the warning signs are when somebody turns up with the offer of a large check or a prolonged sum over a period of time, but they have strings attached to it.
Right.
Which are the power strings, are they? So by which we're talking about restricted giving, in particular.
So for example,
someone who says, and it may, it may sound wonderful, but they say, God's laid it on my heart to give £30,000 a year to the church for the next 5 years to fund somebody to work with X group, whatever that group that
is. Well, that sounds great, doesn't it? Someone came to me and said, here's £30,000 the next 5 years for a youth worker. I think as a leader, my initial reaction would be to bite the hand off.
Which,
great.
And that might be the right answer. But the question at that point is who's making the decisions about what the church is doing and where they're investing in ministry. So if the church kind of leadership structure, if the whoever the group is that is making the decisions, if a youth worker had been fifth on the list of things that they'd really want to do, then they're thinking, well, actually, this person coming offering that money, maybe it's worth thinking. Praying about whether that would be a really good thing. Yeah. Maybe the Lord has laid it on the heart to do that, and think and pray about it. But actually, there's also a risk that person who's coming with that gift is saying, well, I've got my agenda. I don't agree with the way the leadership's gone. I want a youth worker. And even worse, maybe this is the youth worker I want. Here's the £30,000 a year to fund them. Away you go, church. In which case, the kind of leadership is stuck, aren't they? If they then turn that down, then that's really problematic. So I think just it's, be prayerfully aware of the risks of money. And I think those who've got money in the church need to be particularly careful about exercising power within the church when they're not in an elected position, but they're using their power to foist themselves into that.
So the best givers in any situation are ones who love the church, belong to the church, just want to give to the work of
the
church.
And say, here's £30,000, church leadership who were elected by the church into those roles. You make the decisions about where the money should be spent because we trust you for doing that.
And it's good to be honest, isn't it? Sometimes those things arise because actually leaders are showing a lack of vision. And they're not really thinking about, how do we grow the church? Well, actually, if we had a youth worker, maybe the church would grow. It's just kind of, we spend all our time, and perhaps I'm feeling this a bit personally because it's the nature of church life. You spend all your time just kind of getting by, getting through to the next month, getting through to the next month. So actually, if you're not giving clear leadership in the church as to where you think and pray and hope the church is going under God, that is going to be more likely that people are going to say, what about this? What about that? I could fund that. I could find this. So it may be a vacuum of leadership, actually.
It could well
kind
be.
Kind of gives rise to those sorts of moments.
Yeah. And it's not all
sinister.
No, not at all. And it could be, the most wonderful thing to have that person turn up and say, I'd love to give this money. But it's just worth being aware. And particularly if you are that person who's thinking of giving that money, being aware of, where's your heart? Is your heart for... are you trusting the Lord? Are you trusting the people who you have within your church who are leading and seeking to make good and wise decisions about the use of money within the church family? Yeah. Prayerful, careful thought about use of money.
Now, times are a bit tough at the moment. I guess, for some people, times are always tough. Whatever point in the economic cycle you are, there are probably some people in church for whom life is tougher than others. That's inevitable, isn't it? How do churches care well financially for people for whom life is tough? There are two extremes, aren't there? One is, we live in a welfare state. Actually, if someone loses their job, if someone, perhaps there's a very sad and messy divorce, they're left without income, the state will look after them. That's kind of one extreme. The other extreme is, the church need to look after their own, need to provide all the help that's needed. And the church ends up becoming the welfare state. I'm guessing that we actually need to be somewhere in the middle. How do churches steer a course, especially at the moment when there perhaps will be an increased number of people with financial need?
It's challenging, and it will clearly vary from church to church in different kind of socioeconomic situations in the kind of demographic where the church is situated and the communities they're in. I'm certainly aware of quite a number of churches. Quite a lot of churches within the COVID period where the church set up a hardship fund to enable a group of people within the church to administer that fund and to help out people who are facing particular difficulty. Helping where a family just couldn't afford some of the basics. The washing machine broke down, they couldn't afford whatever it was, and so enabled them to be able to replace that or something like that. It's hard to say, isn't it, in terms of where are the needs. I think in the current, particularly this is perhaps particularly relevant as when we're recording this, we're going into a winter which could be cold. People can't.
I've got my warm jumper on today.
Well done. And we've turned the FIC office kind of thermostat down, I'm sure. There will be people who will struggle to be to keep warm and fed over the winter. And there are definitely churches out there which are seeking to meet needs of their local communities, both the physical needs and keeping people warm and fed, offering food as well as a warm place to be, as well as wanting to hold out the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ. So, it's a great opportunity to do that into our communities.
And we also ought to reflect just briefly. We're an association of independent churches, and all this stuff we've been talking about is in your church. Mm-hmm. But actually, there is some. We're not just an association. We are a fellowship of independent churches, and so actually, what we've been talking about in individual churches is true of the fellowship as a whole. There might be a church which is perhaps it's kind of in a largely commuter belt with people with secure, well-paid jobs, which actually is going to ride the storm fairly easily. There will be another church perhaps just down the road or in another part of the country which is in a much poorer area, perhaps where the collection plate was the main form of income, and where times are much, much tougher. And as churches, we need to be thinking beyond our borders, don't we? So of course, there's the responsibility to think about those in the flock that the Lord has given us. We need to be caring for them. But actually, we have connections with other churches, but both at home and abroad. And that generosity needs to extend beyond our borders, doesn't it?
It does. Wasn't it a privilege? To use the funds that the Lord has given us to care for churches down the road. I mean, we see that through Philippians. Gospel partnership in Philippians is about helping one church, another church in a different part of the Mediterranean.
Yeah, 2 Corinthians 8:9, exactly the same.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Brilliant. Yeah. So let's exercise gospel partnership between churches to enable them to meet the needs, meet financial needs. This is slightly, maybe slightly off the topic. One of the exciting things that we're trying to do at Kingdom Bank is think about how we help gospel partnership between churches which are, feel very similar, feel that they've got a strong affinity between each other, to enable them to potentially to buy a building when one couldn't afford to do that. Mm-hmm. And there are ways that we can structure products to do that. But I think where we see gospel partnership in action, Christians supporting Christians in another part of the county, another part of the world. Isn't that a great joy?
It is. And some of the greatest stories we hear actually in the FIC are churches that are partnering, a church in London partnering with a church in the north somewhere or in Scotland and actually supporting gospel ministry, not just because actually it's a hard place to minister, but because especially at the moment it's difficult to raise funding and finance for some of these places that are more deprived. And actually, what a great way to serve the gospel. Now, I want to just ask you a final question as a church treasurer. So this is me, church leader, talking to the church treasurer. How can we look after treasurers better? I think a lot of our churches are just frankly relieved when someone says they'll be the church treasurer. Don't have to worry about that. There you go. Here's all the files and the folders. Get on with it. Thank you, Lord. I'm so grateful. How can we as leaders care for those who are looking after the finances of the church? Have you ever been asked that question before?
I've not been asked that question. I think it's a really good question. I think what I'd say is that often church leaders, because of just in exactly the way you describe it, they pass the responsibility to the church treasurer and kind of feel that they can wash their hands in an appropriate way, but they wash their hands of it because they don't understand it.
Yeah,
and they think, at least the church treasurer can sort that out. I think the church treasurer could then feel very lonely for the next 20 years of doing the job, or 5 years, or a year before they decide they just can't. Because they have to give up. I think a church treasurer can feel really supported if they meet with the church leader from time to time, church leaders from time to time, not just to talk about other things and talk about, how much money is there in the kitty, can we afford this, but actually to say, what are our financial priorities? One of the things we did early on in our church, when I kind of shortly after being a taking up the role as church treasurer, actually we did think through some of these issues of power and control in money and where the money flowed within the church, different restricted funds and those kind of things. Yep. And we had a bit of a conversation about that, which I guess was led by me as treasurer. But thinking about actually, what are we trying to do as a church? How does the flow of money within the church, how does that fit with the mission that we've got as a church, which we've defined in terms of reaching our community with the gospel of the Lord Jesus? And is the structural, the financial structure of stuff meeting that? And having that conversation with your treasurer, rather than just expecting them to produce spreadsheets and count the cash, actually to help them feel that they're part of the mission and the vision of what the church is seeking to do. I think that'd be really, really valuable in terms of enabling them to feel that they're part of what's going on and supported, and not just
that's being counted. That's really helpful, Paul. And I think as well, as leaders, we've got to make sure we give spiritual care to those who are looking after the money. I mean, it seems to be pretty clear in Scripture that sort of diaconal role, whether you see that in Acts 6 or 1 Timothy 3, those are spiritual roles. Mm. And I think it's a mistake. It's a category mistake to say, well, people who are, you know, the church caretaker or the church cleaner or the, someone who's doing a very kind of delineated specific role in church, whether that's a big role or a little role, that's just kind of a job. I think that's a category mistake in church life. And we've actually got to see it as part of Christian service. And actually, we want people in Christian service in the church who are godly, growing in godliness, whom we care for spiritually. Mm. It seems to me that that's really important, that discipleship aspect of it.
I don't want to end this on a kind of negative note, but if you're a church leader, do be aware that just protect your treasurer from sin as well.
Okay.
In terms of if you think there's church treasurer, you know, that's their role. They can have access to all the money and unfettered access without appropriate safeguards. That's a really dangerous thing to do.
Yeah.
Please make sure that it takes two signatories to move any cash. Please make sure that when the cash is counted, that there are two people signing that. It doesn't need to be the treasurer. It can be other people as well. Make sure that jobs are spread around so that it isn't just the treasurer who always sees everything that's going on, because that puts them in quite a high temptation spot.
Yeah.
To be able, because it gives them the opportunity to kind of, you know, take money, and we don't want to put anyone in that temptation
helpful.
In anyone's way. So
I don't think that's ending negatively, because actually part of discipleship is helping people to grow in godliness.
Love them by caring for them, and don't put them into temptation.
Yeah, so I think that's a very positive thing to do. Now, there is one other thing to say. You may not know this, but this is a very exciting thing for leaders to know, is that if you belong to the FIC, you also get membership of the Association of Church Treasurers, free of charge. So if you've got, this won't excite you if you're a church leader, but it might excite your treasurer. If you're a church leader listening to this, do be aware and do let your treasurer know that the Association of Christian Treasurers.
Church Accountants and Treasurers, ACAT.
Oh, yep, that's the one.
Yep,
and I don't even know what it's called.
Association of Church Accountants and Treasurers, who produce lots of really helpful stuff. Yep.
So we will put the link on the bottom of the show notes. And so you get a membership of that as being part of the FIC. So do make sure your treasurer makes use of it. Paul, thanks so much. You've been really helpful, really wise. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Andrew.
And it's just good for us to lead in all areas of church life, and that includes finance. So thank you so much. And thank you for joining us. This has been Independence FIC Podcast. Don't forget, you can rate us, like us in the normal way, and look forward to catching up with you soon.